Hello and welcome to the 10th episode of the Adamola Bookman podcast. This is the podcast where we read footballers' autobiographies and then talk about them. Yeah, hold on tight. And this week we've read El Diego, the autobiography of none other than Diego Maradona. So, Johnny, Maradona, what do you think?
This is as sexy as it gets in the world of football, isn't it? If you're not into this, you're into, yeah, you're not going to be into any of them ultimately, are you?
Before you read the book, tell me your feelings about Maradona. What did you think about him?
I suppose you couldn't be a football fan without being aware of Maradona, but let's say he signed for Naples in 1984, for Napoli in 1984. I was born in December 1983, so I was thinking about it. If you were to ask, for example, is Maradona the best player in the world ever? And people are like, yeah, but ultimately people are full of shit, really, because you don't really actually know, right? So it's kind of like print the legend or whatever. Like I know the legend of Maradona and I've seen the highlights, but it's not like I was around for Maradona, really. I saw more of Maradona than I did of see of Neville Southall, but that their careers, they overlapped, you know, more or less the exact same time frame, you know.
Yeah, absolutely right. Well, as ever, I've got a few years on you, Johnny. So when I was a kid, he was indisputably the greatest footballer in the world. Arguably the most famous man in the world. Indeed, he was named such during the 1980s. Obviously, as an Englishman, he left an indelible mark on us. I was not really football conscious in 86, so I don't really hold any grudges there. Like, that was just something that happened in the past, which didn't bother me too much. But yeah, as a kid, he was the best player in the world. If you were playing football in the playground, you were Maradona, right?
Yeah. I remember once, actually, this is funny enough. Ireland were playing, but this would have been in the early 90s. And there was some fella, random fella, coming off the bench. And my brother was like, oh, this guy's better than Maradona. He's the best player in the world. And like, I was just getting upset about this guy who was coming on against Ireland. But he was just some randomer who was like a sub for whatever it was, like Romania or Bulgaria, whoever it might have been, you know.
He was the best player in the world in a way that I don't think we've had since. He was like in the 80s, like, you know, Michael Jackson was the biggest pop star in the world. In a way we don't have now. I know, obviously, we have Messi, but you can't say Messi without Ronaldo. I don't care that Messi won the World Cup, but Ronaldo achieved almost as much, right? And you could make an argument both ways. But in the 80s, Maradona, numero uno.
Yeah. There's something about Maradona, and maybe this is the thing. As a character, Messi is just boring as it gets, isn't he? Christ alive. As an individual.
Whereas Maradona...
Maradona is like, as well as being arguably the greatest footballer, he's like the greatest character. It's amazing to be both, you know.
Well, as you can see, I keep trying to interject because I came up with something in my head and I'm desperate to say it, Johnny. It's like Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. Like, they always say Ginger Rogers did everything that Fred Astaire did, but she did it backwards, wearing heels. Before Messi, Maradona achieved the status of greatest player in the world, but he did it whilst partying all night and snorting bags of cocaine. He did it in an environment where professionalism was nowhere near the same. I mean, can you imagine? And I know it's a moot point, but if Maradona had been raised in the world of professionalism that had now, because if you look at his numbers, they're nowhere near Messi and Ronaldo. Nowhere near.
Yeah.
But he was number one.
Yeah. I was thinking that Argentina as a state, like in some kind of like imaginary arms race, wanted to recreate Maradona. And they got the genes of Maradona. And they said, okay, let's mix him with the most boring woman in the world. Who would that be? Like Theresa May or something? Like, it's like Messi. It's like the love child of Maradona and Theresa May or something like that.
Well, they had a go, didn't they? Because, Maradona's daughter had a kid with Sergio Aguero. And Sergio Aguero is pretty dull. He's a nice man. Such a nice man.
Maradona, on that point, Maradona has two kids. I think it's Dalma and Gianni.
Maradona has
Maradona has quite a few kids, but Maradona, in the book at least, he had two girls, you know, at this point. Dalma and Giannini. The princess and the tank is what he calls them. Who do you think Con Agüero was married to?
Oh, here you go. I'm going to guess the tank.
Correct! I wanted to ask you a couple of things, actually. This book is written in Spanish, you know, and it's translated into English. And so there's certain expressions. So I don't know if they're Maradonaisms or if they're just Spanish kind of, you know, kind of clunky translations. But I wanted to ask you about a few Maradonaisms and you can tell me what you think they mean, okay? So who's the beard?
God.
Yes, he talks about the beard all the time. What is a thermos head?
He's a dummy. He's a fucking idiot, right?
An idiot, yeah. What's Montezuma's revenge?
Diarrhea.
Diarrhea. What happens if you took the cat's milk?
That's taking the Michael, isn't it? Like,
yeah, taking the biscuit or taking the piss, exactly, yeah. And what happens if you let the tortoise get away from you?
And that happens a lot, right?
He says it every second page. I really let the tortoise get away from me.
Or directors let the tortoise get away from them. Like, yeah. Oh, sporting directors. Being slow to act. Rodney from Only Fools and Horses would let the tortoise get away from him.
Yeah, so there you go. There's some Maradonaisms, or potentially just very standard Spanish or even South American phrases.
Yeah, the translation was at times quite clunky. There's a whole bit where the translator talks to other people and that she's tried to use British expressions quite a lot.
But the other thing about Maradona is he's just so profane, isn't he? He's always calling everyone a motherfucker and a bastard and a son of a bitch, regardless of whether he likes them or not. Like,
yeah, fucking motherfucker. The translation I found a little bit off-putting, but quite entertaining at the same time.
Yeah, like the book itself, in that sense, and how it's written, and there's quite a lot of omissions, I think, because you get that with autobiographies. It's not perfect, but it's really enjoyable, I think. I really enjoyed this book.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. If you like Spanish names, man, this is the book for you. It is like the fucking Buenos Aires phone book at times. Like, yeah. I mean, he remembers every single person he ever played with. Like, he can name like his under 11 team, like, you know, all of them, and they've all got crazy nicknames. And yeah. I've got some questions for you.
Okay, go on.
All right, then. So, who's La Tota?
His mother.
That's right. Do you know what La Tota means?
No, I don't.
The everything.
Oh.
That's quite cute. El Narragón.
That is Bilardo.
Correct. And what does Narragón mean?
I did look this one up. It means big nosed.
Yeah, it does.
Hey,
El Flaco?
Oh, El Flaco is the manager who brought him into the Argentinian team. Mamati.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And it means skinny, I think.
It does mean skinny. Yeah, everyone's got a nickname.
Everyone. Do you know what El Cholo or Cholo, you know, Diego Simeone, do you know what that means?
I do not.
Nothing. It has no meaning.
Oh, really? No, nothing.
Yeah, no meaning. The word doesn't exist in Spanish. I looked that one up, all right. But going back to Bilardo, right, just very quickly, because it's kind of fun. This is top quality research on Bilardo, taken directly from his Wikipedia page. After graduating as a physician, Bilardo retired from play and accepted a job as Estudiantes coach. For the next years, he divided his time between managing his family and helping manage his father's furniture business. He even found time to research rectal cancer and practice as a gynecologist. He's the World Cup winning manager of Argentina. That's astounding.
Busy boy. I think Gary O'Neill's similar. Well, let's talk. I mean, okay, let's get started with the
book. Let's get into the book.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what, like chapter one, I felt like I did when I first watched City of God, reading that first chapter. I was charmed. I was charmed. I just, oh, it seems so romantic. I know the poverty, but just the whole romance of South America in the 1970s was just really overwhelming. I really, really was transported there. It just sounded so exciting.
Have you seen any footage or any photographs of this Villa Fiorito, the slum that he's from?
Yeah, there's one in the book, and yeah, it's like
Oh,
my
yeah, is
shed.
it? It is a shanty town, right?
Yeah, it is. Ten people living in the house. Said
Yeah,
it got wetter inside than it was outside.
so
Yeah.
absolutely dirt poor. But I don't think he wasn't unusual in that. There's obviously a lot of people from this background.
Well, very much so. Yeah, his dad was what, he pounded animal bones 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. Doesn't sound a great deal of fun.
No, it doesn't. He refers to himself as a little black boy from Buenos Aires. And I wondered about that. Like, and you hear, you read that, you see him being referred to by others as that as well. I didn't quite get it, but like his father's mixed indigenous and Spanish heritage, and his mother's mixed heritage is Italian and Croatian. But they found out posthumously that he has like African heritage as well, from a slave connection.
Oh, no kidding. Okay, I
Yeah.
didn't know that.
He very much identifies as the plucky underdog, doesn't he? In every sense.
Yeah, well, he's right. I mean, that's it. It must have very much been an influence on his socialism, which plays a part in his later life.
Yeah. Diego liked to play with anger, like as a kind of as a motivation. He played football in the streets. He was mad about football. And he was a phenom, right? Right from the get-go. I read elsewhere that when he showed up for this team that he played for, Argentinos Juniors, actually, this is quite fun. The name of that team is, he was taken for a trial with Cebolitas, and it means the little onions. That's quite
Little
nice.
onions. It's
Yeah.
adorable.
Yeah. The youth side of Argentinos Juniors, they just thought he was lying about his age. I think he was very small and he had a big head, but they just thought like this just can't be true. He's just too amazing. But they made him get ID and prove, like this is when he was eight, I think, when he proved to prove his age.
Yeah, he was born in 1960 on the 30th of October. When he was born, he was covered in dark fur, so we called him Palooza.
Yeah, fuzz. It means
And that was
fuzz.
his nickname as a little kid. And it's all the cliches, wasn't it? If he was made to run errands, he'd run around like doing keepy uppies with a little orange. He got his
Yeah.
first football when he was three and he used to sleep with it. He loved it so much.
There's something about Maradona. He kind of leaps off the page or something, doesn't he? As a character. And just this, he seems to have a, I don't know how to describe it, but just obviously an obsession with football, but just like he really like, he's obsessed with winning from a very young age and was obsessed with his teammates and love. Like he seems to have experienced the world in such an intense way. He's a very intense kind of emotional character.
He liked to cry, didn't he? Loves a cry.
Forever
Man,
crying.
he's sobbing his socks off on every fucking page. Like, no matter what happens, like, I cried that day, I tell you, I cried. I cried.
Yeah,
He loves
I
to repeat himself as well. But no, you're right. Going back to your point, man, this is the man who lived. And maybe not always in the best way, but he was gonna, in every way. Women, drugs, later on food. I mean, he embraced it all.
The funny thing about reading footballers' books that I'm learning is that it's very hard to make football come alive on a page. It really is. Like he's talked about the 1986 goal, for example, the good one where he runs around everybody, and it just doesn't translate, when it's written. So oftentimes I find when we're reading these books, the football is often, any descriptions of the football is usually quite dull, isn't it?
Yeah,
But
that's right.
he has a person. He just kind of like, it's just like, he just experienced everything in a very intense way. It was that in itself, I found really, there's something very intriguing or compelling about that.
Yeah, pure charisma, the lad. Absolute charisma.
That's it, yeah. And I suppose that we should avoid the temptation to make constantly make messy comparisons, but he, both of them were captain Argentina, obviously. And I suppose you wouldn't necessarily think of this kind of player as a captain, but he was, as you say, insanely charismatic.
Yeah, that's right. I think, yeah, he would inspire people, if not by his actions. Well, certainly not his actions off the pitch, but on the pitch. I mean, you live and die for this lad. I mean, he was. I mean, I knew it when I was a kid. This man just radiates charisma, like incredible, incredible player. And you can see you'd be inspired by him. You'd want to play with him, and you'd want to play for him.
He played for Argentinos Juniors. He made into the first team as a 15-year-old. and he got noticed very early. He had his first cap for Argentina when he was 17. And, you know, there was a lot of talk, I gather, around Argentina about this guy, this up-and-coming guy. And it was River Plate who were kind of in for him, really, because...
there's another team in for him as well, Johnny.
Yeah, there was another team in for him. They must be so raging. Can you imagine?
Well, I'm glad. Oh, God. Can you imagine? The team that was in for him for £150,000, which was a hell of a lot for a 17-year-old in the 70s, was Sheffield United.
Yeah, wow.
And it was only the military government in Argentina at the time that stopped him going from going to Sheffield United.
They asked for money, I think. They asked for kickback.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I saw that somewhere else. They asked for essentially the equivalent of the fee. Again, Sheffield United balked at that.
We have the Argentinian military dictatorship to thank for that. Thank you, Argentinian military dictatorship. I couldn't bear it if he played for Sheffield United. I would not be able to bear it.
Yeah, so River Plate were the moneyed team in Argentina. And Diego's father told him that he had a dream of him playing for, as in he literally had a dream one night. And Diego was very struck by this because it was very uncharacteristic of his father to talk like this. This is just a Maradona characteristic. He decided he was going to go to Boca and he was going to move the world to work to that, to make that happen. So River Plate were the ones who could afford them. And Boca were penniless, really. But he went on television and he was being interviewed, like, where are you going to go? Are you going to play for all the rest of it? And he said, Boca Juniors, when they didn't have the money to buy him. So, you know, at that point, I suppose Boca had to make it work. And how they made it work was essentially they swapped half of their team with Argentinos Juniors, who were in the second or third division. So you can imagine, you can imagine how happy the players were to be packed off to this team a couple of divisions down in exchange for this 17-year-old or whatever age he was at the time.
His record at Argentinos is phenomenal, considering he was a teenager for the most of that time. 166 games with 116 goals.
And now we're talking.
This was truly a phenomenon.
So Boca, he was given apartments instead of cash, and some of them in these crummy neighborhoods that he wasn't able to get rid of and stuff like that. And they had to play a lot of friendlies to raise money. And that seems to have happened at other times in his career as well.
He just chose such unusual clubs almost all the time. I mean, you know, to be the, you know, as the greatest player in the world, he did not play for any of the world's big boys, did he? Apart from Barcelona, I guess. But that was brief.
Yeah. Yeah. And in this sense, he is the anti-Messi, you know?
No, that's right. I mean, at one point, he was offered an incredibly lucrative deal from an American management company. But he turned it down because he'd have to get dual citizenship and get a US citizenship. And he absolutely refused. And he claims that was worth $100 million, right?
In terms of his charisma, he describes a situation at Boca. I think his arrival probably put a few noses out of joint within the Boca dressing room. Half of the team has been sent away. There's this upstart has arrived. So they don't warm to him immediately. But at one point, the Boca Ultras storm their hotel. And I gather these guys are like a drug cartel or whatever. And they're threatening the players and they're armed. And they're essentially saying, you guys better start performing or you're in trouble. And Maradona's like, get the fuck out of here. And he stands up to these guys and they're all like apologizing to Maradona. They're saying, no, we're not here. You're doing great, Diego. We're mad about you. It's everyone else. Everyone else is a shithead. But Diego's like, get the fuck out of here. And that's kind of what it brought the rest of the team on side for him. Which is a remarkable scene if it's true.
El Abuelo, that was the leader of that gang, the grandfather. Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Sinister.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, I don't know if this is just lazy stereotypes and tropes, but, you know, it is like Narcos at times, I think. And Maradona seems like a character out of that kind of, you know, out of that kind of TV show.
Oh, he absolutely does. Yeah, I mean, he absolutely does. That's what I'm talking about. It's just that sort of sexy romance of that time. Like,
can you imagine he played for Boca 40 times first time around, scoring 28 goals, but they won the league in 1981. He was there from 1981 to 1982, and they won the league in 1981. It was the only time that he won the Argentinian League.
Yeah. Yeah. The second time around, which we'll get to, was ill-fated.
One of the things, he had a problem with the manager at Boca Juniors, a fella called Silvio Marzolini. And this is another thing that you see repeated throughout. He is not a man who enjoys an authority figure, is he?
He does not like an authority figure one bit, no.
No.
And I mean, that reoccurs forever and ever through the book. I mean, there's barely a director he gets along with, right? Chairman and directors, scum of the earth.
The money men in football, he absolutely loads. Everyone who was ever in a kind of a club executive, but also the Argentinian FA, the FIFA, you name it, he absolutely hates them. And again, I think this is his background is so central to who he is as a person, you know?
Yeah, very much so.
So then he went to Barcelona in 1982, but didn't really work out in Barcelona, did it?
It certainly didn't. But he didn't always have the most professional attitude. I tell you what, he loves a friendly. He loves a testimonial, doesn't he? There was one time, Paul Breitner, the German, asked him to play in a testimonial for him. Barcelona didn't want him to go because he'd be missing games. Wanted his passport. They took his passport, and his then manager, the thermos head, had given it to the club. So he went into the trophy room. He said, you've got 5 minutes to get me my passport, and then I start smashing trophies. And he did. He smashed one, and they took him seriously, although apparently he still didn't play in the testimonial, but he did get his passport back.
He says that he would have been more suited to Real Madrid. Because when you think about Barcelona and the club that is more than a club and all that kind of stuff, that's not who Maradona is it?
That was astonishing. I mean, I just sort of read that twice. I'm more Madrid. He's more Madrid, having played for Barcelona. I mean, who else would say that?
So he was there for 2 years, and he had a bad time. He contracted a hepatitis. I think the rumors were that it was a sexually transmitted thing, but he doesn't really go into that in the book. And he, that was in his first season, so he didn't play very much. And in the second season, he had a really bad tackle against Atletico Bilbao. I think did he break his ankle? Anyway, he messed up his ankle and he was sidelined for a long time. And apparently this is when he started on the cocaine.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, he goes into the detail about tackle a lot. He could hear the bone crack because it went like...
Oh, that's right. He said it sounded like a stick, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, and that is when, the cocaine started.
He likes an enemy. Maradona's last match for Barcelona is against Bilbao in the Copa del Rey final, and they lose 1-0. And at the end, somebody goads Maradona. Have you seen footage of that fight? At the end of that fight?
No, I haven't.
At the end
of that? No.
Now that is worth watching. It's not like, it's not your standard football fight. So this is after the match. And like I said, he lives the world so intensely, I think, and losing would have cut him deep. And he goes wild. He's just running around like scissors kicking and scissors kneeing people. Like he knees one guy in the head and he lays him out. The guy is wiped out on the floor. And it's just total mayhem. And it's the Copa del Rey, which I understand means, does that mean the Royal Cup? And the king was in attendance.
Yeah, good for him. And that was the year previously, he won the Copa del Rey, right? And that was his only trophy.
And he talks about that. He comes back to that. Like, the trophies mean a lot to him.
I mean, if you look at his trophies, there's not that many, really.
No.
But then you look at his personal awards, and there's up three pages of, like, he's got, like, three or four league titles, right? A couple of Copa del Reyes, obviously the World Cup. But his personal awards, genuinely, I think there's three pages of them.
And another thing that really marks him as being different than Messi is it's all about Argentina, really. Not all about Argentina, but by God, does he love Argentina, playing for Argentina.
Yeah, he very much says that. Like, that was the great pride of his career, right? Was playing for his national side.
Yeah.
But he didn't play for them that often, though, did he? I mean, like, you know how many caps he got?
No.
46.
Come on.
In like 17, 18 years, he got 46 caps. I made no. Eric Dyer's got more caps than that. Theo Walcott's got more caps than that.
Declan Rice has got 50 caps for England now and 3 for Ireland. So he's got more than...
Let it go, Johnny. Let it go.
Going back to the Argentina thing, he wasn't included in the 78 squad, even though he was already a bit of a phenom and he'd already represented Argentina, but he was left behind. And obviously they won the World Cup, so he can't really have too much complaints there. But I think this broke
But he does, so Johnny. He does. He has lots of complaints about it.
His little heart. Yeah, he doesn't go to 78, but he does go to 82. And at this point, he is playing for... He's just gone to Barcelona. He's signed for Barcelona, but he hasn't started playing for them. So there's a lot of talk about Maradona, and this was going to be his World Cup, but it didn't work out that way. He was useless. They were useless. He said they trained for 4 months, the team, the Argentinian team, before the World Cup, which I thought was notable. He said that he wasn't going to touch the ball with his left foot for all of those 4 months. He was only going to train with his right. And then he would unleash the magic of his left when he got to the World Cup. I thought that was quite nice.
Well, he was accurate about one thing. Left footers are easier on the eye. He just thinks players who play with a left foot are better.
In 82, they lost to Brazil and he got sent off. And that was the end of that World Cup for them. So Napoli, he's such a kind of tragic hero, Maradona. And Napoli, while all at once seems to be absolutely where Maradona should be and absolutely the worst place he possibly could be.
Yeah, that sounds right. Have you ever been to Naples, Johnny?
No.
I've been to Naples a couple of times and it really does have that like tinderbox feel about it, like it could just kick off at any moment. Just walking around the streets, just as a tourist, you just feel the atmosphere of it. As you say, it was the perfect and the worst place he could possibly be.
And you do wonder if things could have been different for him had he not had his drug problems. But then do you think in Naples that, you know, famously the Camorra, the mafia in Naples were very powerful. And there seems to be a belief that they paid for his transfer, because this was the most expensive transfer and Napoli didn't have any money. So people were like, where the fuck did this money come from? So did you get the impression from the book anyway that they might have been like keeping him hooked, you know, essentially using
him? That sounds very likely. I mean, all the time he tries to do, he's like, oh, they offered me Rolexes and I didn't want to take them. But you did take them, didn't you? Like, Diego, you did take them. You just didn't want to. He was conscious that he was dealing with the devil, but he dealt with them anyway, it would seem to me.
Yeah, and I think for Maradona, maybe all his life, the kind of rules didn't really apply. So maybe he never felt like he could always... There's a story about him going to prison, into prison to see Pablo Escobar, you know?
I mean, it's not a surprise, is it?
But you just can imagine that he never felt that there would be consequences for him, you know? And there wasn't in that case, you know?
No, that's right.
Well, sorry, to correct myself. There was consequences, maybe. They used him like he was opening whatever businesses and showing up and taking photographs. He was the kind of face of a lot of their business kind of enterprises. So they were using him, and I'm sure that the whole drugs thing went out of control as a result of the kind of environment that he was in. So sorry, there was a price to pay for him.
And it undoubtedly worked, right? I mean, I wouldn't have been familiar with Napoli in the 1980s or the 1990s if it wasn't for Maradona. It would just be another, you know, Bari, who knows fucking thing about Bari, but I knew all about Napoli because of Maradona.
I was thinking it's like going to Middlesbrough or Sheffield United. No team from the south of Italy had ever won the league before Maradona went there. And they won it twice when he was there.
Also, which I found notable, was at the time, I mean, as I say, I've been to Naples a couple of times, and like everywhere you go around Naples, there's pictures of Maradona. I bought a T-shirt. I mean, he's so closely associated. But at the time, I mean, he wasn't universally popular. He talks about getting whistled and booed. I mean, a lot of the time with Cobra America, as I said before, he wanted to take a lovely long holiday. I'll tell you, Napoli, I'm not coming back. It's unbelievable to think of him in the modern game. You imagine like a modern footballer now. I'm on holiday, mate. I'm not coming back for the start of the season. But he'd do it.
Yeah.
And they'd boo him for it.
Yeah. But then the other side of that is there was people going on a hunger strike and chaining themselves to the gates outside Stadio São Paulo. demanding that they complete this transfer. Like, so, you know, they wanted this guy bad. Again, can you imagine a situation where people were going on hunger strike to sign who? I don't know.
I might go on hunger strike if we sell Morgan Gibbs-White.
Yeah. Like the Napoli stuff, and I watched a good bit of the footage, and some of it really is magic. He's just such a beautiful player. This obviously low center of gravity and quite like, but like not shaped like Messi. You think of them like almost as like, you know, being the exact same, but like he's a kind of much kind of more powerful kind of build. And he gets heavy even when he's playing in Napoli. He's a heavy.
He's stocky, like, right? I mean, there's no question he's stocky. But he said his ankles can rotate more than most people, and that's where the magic came from. Like,
oh, go
he can
on.
Rotate his ankles more than any other player.
It was kind of an interesting relationship because he was there, they won the league, and obviously this was a massive thing. Everybody knows how important football Calcio is to the Italians, so this was absolutely huge. There was great, absolutely super lines in the book. You know, there was like the chance where things like, we have no money, we have no bread, we have no ideas, we have no opportunities, but we have Maradona. It's so good, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is. That's what football can do, isn't it? When you've got nothing else, if your football team's good, you've always got that. Like,
and I think Maradona is that to the biggest degree ever, really. Just what he brought to people's lives, it seems to have just, it's so outsized and shows the power of sport, the power of football in particular in this instance.
Yeah, that's a big one, isn't it? Is he the most significant player for one single club ever? It's hard to think of someone more outsized for their team, a player of that stature playing for a team who didn't share that stature.
Yeah, well,
I
absolutely.
I can't think of anyone else.
Well, like I say, he was, as you said, he was the most famous player in the world at the time, one of the most famous people, and he was not the playing for one of the most famous teams. It would be the equivalent of, you mentioned Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson leaves the Jackson 5 and he goes to like Blue.
Nice one, yeah.
I think one of the things that made him a good match for Napoli and for Naples is, again, how he sees himself as a person, as this outsider. And this becomes very significant during the World Cup in 1990. But he talks about how Neapolitans were never treated as Italians by fellow Italians. And when they went north to play against Juve or Milan or whatever, they would be essentially just racially abused as with this kind of north-south divide. It's almost like they see them as a different race. And
yeah, they had banners, right? Welcome to Italy when he went up to Milan and Juve.
Lavatevi, wash yourselves. I think it was all pretty, it was pretty rough stuff.
Yeah, they call them dirt people, don't they? Something like that. But it translates as like dirt people, the people from the south.
The Mezzogiorno.
Yes.
Yeah. That's secondary school geography coming back to me there now. Maradona identified with that. And that's why it was a good match for him. He just identified with Neapolitans. There's a certain kind of gilded cage element to his time at Napoli, I think, towards the end. I think he just wanted to go somewhere where he could have a quieter life. Can you imagine just to live in his shoes for one day? I think you'd die. I think you would just die. The fame and the, you know, people just all over you from one end of the day, from the start to the end of the day. I don't think you'd be able to, I don't think you'd handle it, Al.
Oh, I think I could live like Maradona. I mean, that's it. He doesn't really get into that side of his life at all. Like, I mean, the partying and the women who are copious, right? I mean, he doesn't get into that at all, really.
No. And when he was in Naples, he had a son who he didn't acknowledge until many, many years later. You mentioned La Tota. His wife is La Claudia. And he's just mad about Claudia. But yeah, he was cheating on her all the time, wasn't he?
All the time. Yeah, he says right at the start, rather coyly, she had to get used to some things. Yeah, she did. Like, she did have to get used to it. There's a story right there going right way back. Like one day, Don Diego's screaming at her because, like, you can't bring my son home. Come on, he's got to play football tomorrow. He didn't get in until super late. And he was like, I wanted to die because I wasn't out with La Claudia that night.
Oh,
Naughty Maradona.
that was a constant issue in his life, and you know the world that he lived in, you know, just surrounded by mafiosa and prostitutes and drugs and all the rest of it. It's not a huge surprise. All of the chapters have got, you know, the titles are like the resurrection, the frustration, the beginning, and so on. And the one about the 86 World Cup is the glory. So this
Yeah,
is the
the
kind.
chapter titles are incredibly grandiose, aren't they? I mean,
They
he's
are
like baby
grandiose, yeah.
Jesus. Like, they really are, like.
He sees himself on that level, I think.
Oh, he sure
So
does.
he says, the glory in my body, in my heart, in my soul, I knew I was living the most sublime moment of my career. 29th of June, 1986, Azteca Stadium, Mexico. That date and that place are now imprinted on my mind, on my skin. I remember the feeling of the cup in my hands. I was shaking it. I was lifting it. I was shaking it. I was kissing it. I was shaking it. I didn't know what I was doing. I lent it to goalie Neri Pompidou for a bit, but I immediately asked for it back. I wanted to be sure it was true that the World Cup belonged to us, to Argentina. And I just thought it was striking because, again, he just seems to live so intensely, and you know, he seems to like just have the most outsized emotions
Yeah, again, he cries on every page.
on every page. Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. So the 86 World Cup, he's there under El Narigón, the big-nosed Bilardo, who he has a love-hate relationship with. And my understanding of the Argentina team of 1986 was that it wasn't great other than Maradona. I think Valdano was a good player. Passarella was in the squad and he was like the other big name, but Maradona stole the, like took the captaincy from him, and that created a huge falling out with Passarella.
Yeah, I'd be hard pushed to name most. I mean, crikey, I've just read the book, but as I've said before, I just gave up on the names after a while. But I'd be hard pushed to name many of those other players, other than Caniggia. And by the way, does he love Caniggia? Oh, baby.
He absolutely loves Caniggia. So the Bilardo went to see him in Barcelona and said, essentially, I want to build my team around you. And Diego loved this. And I don't know, he doesn't say as much in the book, but whether he stipulated it that he wanted to be captain. But at any rate, he took the captaincy from Passarella, the captain in 1978. And he was confronted at one stage by Passarella in a team meeting or in training. He came in late with four or five other players, and Passarella was like, "You're late because you were doing drugs." And Maradona was like, "Yes, I do the drugs, but I'm not doing drugs at the moment." And he said he let Passarella just go at him, and then he was like, "So," and he pulls out this itemized bill, phone bill, and it's like they're all on the, they're all being, somebody has been making long distance calls. And they're all being charged for it, but they don't know who it was. And Maradona produces the bill, and it's an Italian number. And it was Passarella calling someone in Italy. But the real thing that did for Passarella was Valdano apparently was a really significant person in the squad. And he was kind of on the Passarella side. But Diego announces that Passarella was having an affair with another player's wife. And he was traveling to Monaco to have this affair. And that was the end of Passarella, really.
That really was the end of Passarella. He never pulled on the Argentinian shirt again.
One of the things that's worth mentioning about Maradona as well is just how much he got kicked. That guy was absolutely kicked around the place all of the time. In the lead up to the 86 World Cup, they played a qualifier in Venezuela and fans came onto the pitch and a fan kicked him, like belted him in the knee, and he had this bad knee. And he said for all of the qualifiers, every team was targeting the same knee, the right knee. They all knew that he had a pain in his knee and they're just going around kicking him in the knee. Poor fellow was getting kicked up and down the field every game he played, it seemed.
Yeah, and in fact, that injury, that particular, the Venezuelan fan, the thermos head, like, yeah, that affected him his whole career, eh? I think he refers back to that, like, 10 years later, how his knee was never right after that. Quickly moving on to 1990. I mean, I watched that game, the opening game against Cameroon, and they brutalized him, right? Absolutely brutalized him.
But in the lead up to 86, they were not liked in Argentina and they were not doing well. They were getting beaten in friendlies, or they were just barely winning them, to the point that the president of Argentina publicly said that he didn't like the team, which is a bit of a weird one. But Maradona seemed to believe that there was pressure on Bilardo. Maradona said, if you sack Bilardo, I will quit. So Bilardo was kept on.
Yeah, he loved an ultimatum as well, didn't he, Maradona, like all the time.
But yeah, the World Cup in 86, the footage of those things, I know, again, we're talking about the book, but there's something very, it's before my time, but there's just something very nostalgic about that, those kind of footage of World Cups of that era. There's something very special about them, I think.
Oh, there's something sexy about Mexico as well. Eh? I can't think of a better place for a World Cup than Mexico. Just, whoa, that's what a World Cup's all about.
And like, obviously, from an English perspective, you said it was before your kind of football consciousness, but this is, you know, it's kind of another period of heartbreak, a moment of heartbreak for English football fans. But I think for the rest of the world, this is just really magic, really. Not, and no one's, in no small part, I'm sorry to say, because, you know, England were the kind of one of the most, one of the major victims, but just the story, because it is a story of kind of one guy against the world. There's something pretty, pretty intoxicating about that.
Well, that's right. And you can't not talk about, you know, the context of the Falklands War just a couple of years previous to that. Like, I mean, that from an Argentinian sense, it is the perfect revenge. Yeah. And you know what I would rather have won, Johnny? You can have a fucking Falklands, mate. Give me the World Cup. Like,
yeah. Like, and he says that it was like fighting a second war. There was pressure on them to perform when they played against England. And I suppose, you know, we're not saying anything new. We don't have to dwell on it probably too long, but I guess we see the both sides of Maradona in that game. You know, the handball and the, like the kind of the devil and the angel, if you want, you know, just, yeah. You see both sides in the two goals.
What do you expect him to fucking do? I mean, you know, it happens, right? It happens. The ball goes off your hand. All right, he jumped up a bit. He had his hand in the air. But, I mean, even as an Englishman, what, you think he's going to run to the referee and say, oh, sorry, referee, no, I just want to make it quite clear that I handballed that in. I mean, it's nuts. I mean, if a player on my team, like, declared a goal invalid, I'd be fucking furious. I mean, yeah, I always thought that, like, yeah, it's a bit naughty, but I've never felt that angry about it. I've never got Peter Shilton about it ever.
I've always felt this. I think that it's kind of I gather it's kind of a South American outlook, but I think tricking the ref is part of the game and it's the ref's job to catch you. Obviously, I was upset when Henri did, when we had our kind of hand of God moment, if you want, but when Henri did that to Ireland. But if it was the other way around, I would have thought it was even sweeter. I would have enjoyed it more than a legitimate goal. I remember the French football fans were like, oh no, let Ireland win. It's not honorable. I was like, are you fucking crazy? Like I would give a shit. Like, honestly, I would have preferred it to go that way. Like, if we could have cheated our way to a win like that.
I love my bad boys, Johnny. So yeah, I don't begrudge them any of it. Like, not at all. And anyway, the other goal. Boom. Magic. Yeah. Pure, pure magic.
And they beat Germany in, they beat West Germany, I should say, in the final. And that was an exciting final because it was, Argentina went 2-0 up and then Germany pulled it back to 2-2. And at that point, you always expect a team that's come from behind is going to win. But Maradona played a pretty sweet pass for Borruchaga to score the winning goal. So they won 3-2.
And he said he wasn't worried at any point, right? He could see the Germans were running on empty. Like, they had like legs like logs, apparently. And
yeah.
He was confident all the way through. He knew that was destined for them.
But the story of the 1990 World Cup is quite amazing. The Argentinian part of this story, because in a way, it was written for Maradona to win. It's such a shame that they didn't, I think. Now, okay, Germany, it was still West Germany, but Germany had just been united. So maybe there's a nice element to Germany winning the World Cup.
No, there wasn't.
At the time. It wasn't.
You see, I was football conscious by then, and yeah, I mean, that Germany semi-final broke my fucking heart. Yeah, I would have loved to have seen Argentina beat Germany. I hated that German team so passionately.
Yeah,
for the crime of beating England on penalties.
But yeah, so the kind of like what's remarkable is Argentina got to the final. They won one game in the group, and they won one game out of the three knockout games, like as in 90 minutes. The other two games went to penalties. So they got to the final having won two games, which is incredible in itself. And did you watch the Maradona handball against Russia?
No, I didn't.
So you handball to stop Russia from scoring a goal. And it is a blatant handball. Why I say it was written for Argentina to win is because this is when he was in Naples.
Well, this is one of them, mate. I was always made to believe like the whole of Naples were supporting Argentina during that World Cup. That's sort of like how the legend goes, although that doesn't necessarily seem to have been the case. Like, ultimately, they were supporting Italy, as I imagine you would. But yeah, there does seem perhaps there was a vendetta there. Does that sound right?
Yeah, so Argentina played games in the north of Italy. They were booed. All the northerners hated Maradona, so he was booed a lot. But then they played Italy in the knockouts in Naples. And it's just an incredible kind of series of events or whatever that brings this about. So Maradona tried to stoke this south-north antagonism by saying essentially that the Italians never saw Neapolitans as Italian. And this made him, he was the most hated man in Italy after this. Well, largely, like obviously if they put Maradona out, they wouldn't have cared less, but largely because they beat Italy.
Yeah. Yeah, and that sort of stoked the end of his time there as well, didn't it? Like, I mean, after that.
They go on, that was the semi-final, and they go on to lose in a terrible final to West Germany. But this, I think, was this the ultimate, like, is this what really fucked Maradona in the long run? Because really after this, he never really recovers because he goes back to Italy. This kind of protection that seems to have been there for him in terms of his lifestyle and his partying is gone. And did you notice in the book that he doesn't really, he starts talking about this 15-month ban. And I was like, what's the ban for? He barely talks about it.
And it's drugs. Of course it is. Like, I mean, they're out to get him at that point, or at least so he, that's his perception. But on the other hand, he seems to have been pretty openly doing cocaine. I mean, everybody knew it. Everybody knew it. And then he's so astonished when he gets a drug ban.
But if you've been permitted to live as you like total impunity, you live in a different set of rules to everyone else in the entire world, and suddenly that's no longer the case, I think it would be surprising.
Yeah, I suppose it was a surprise, but from the context of a, you know, a world football thing, and certainly from the perspective of a modern era, I mean, how did he think he'd get away with it all the time? I saw some footage
up until that point
of him. He's scoring in a friendly to make it 6-5. I forget the teams, but he runs off and someone brings on and he does a line of coke on the pitch. On the pitch. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that I saw that as well. It's that is really quite striking. It's not something you see.
But I mean, wow. So for perception of him being targeted.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, but he gave them all the ammunition. All the time.
So he was targeted in a sting operation and he was charged with possession of drugs with intention to supply because he gave cocaine to the two prostitutes that he was with. That brought about an end of his time in Italy, but his problems just seemed to kind of multiply. He went to Argentina. He got a possession rap in Argentina as well. And it just seemed from there, he had a few drug, whatever, positive tests, obviously famously in 1994, at the World Cup in 1994. But it's also what ended his career with Boca Juniors was and his footballing career. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's it. 1990 was the end, wasn't it? I mean, it just all peters out from there. Like, just drizzled out. It's sad. Yeah, so that's how many? Three in total? Like,
three, I think, yeah.
And everyone he sees is a massive injustice, right? Every single one. The 94, the ephedrine, all the fury he feels towards that. Like,
so he said,
I don't know. I mean, that's it. He says US sportsmen do it all the time. But
it was over the
counter list.
He bought it over the counter or whatever. Do you buy that stuff? As in, not do you buy it over the counter. Do you buy his story?
No, I don't. I mean, he's totally incapable of any sort of like self-reflection there. Like, I mean, he was just so bleedingly obvious about it, right? All the time.
And I suppose it meant so much to him because his world had fallen apart after 1990. Problems just seemed to follow him everywhere at this point. He went to Seville and his manager was Bilardo, El Naragon, his World Cup manager in 1986. And it was all going well, but then it starts to come apart. That was the end of Europe for him. He goes back to Argentina, Newell's old boys.
The Knobs.
The Knobs in Rosario, which is where Messi is from, and Pochettino, and Che Guevara, I believe. They're all from Rosario, aren't they?
I believe so. Yeah, that is where famously, yeah, where Messi started his career, right?
Yeah.
And he said it was a beautiful time.
Yeah, he loved
but
it.
But it ended very shortly. Five games only. Five games. Well done.
He shot some journalists with an air rifle.
Oh, that incident, he says. Yeah, that little incident. Oh, kinda... that one you know about, or the air rifle. He doesn't mention that he hit four of them.
Yeah.
He hit four journalists with his air rifle.
Yeah, and so he went back to Boca. So this is a Pandora's box of emotion, of course, or him returning to Boca. And it's Bilardo again. He just can't get away from Bilardo.
Good old big nose. And his record there is pretty decent, right? He played 71 games, 35 goals. I mean, he does all right.
But it just would have meant so much to him, I think, at this point. You get it, like his career is coming to an end and football is everything. Well, football and drugs, I suppose, are everything to Maradona. So I think you can see the desperation in him that he wants it to go well. And he plays a season with Boca and they are playing against, they're competing with Vélez Sarsfield for the championship. And he misses five penalties in a row towards the end of the season.
Yeah, I did notice that. Five in a row. I mean, at some point, you've got to say, well, you've missed the last two, right?
Yeah.
Okay, but you've missed the last three. You missed the last four. I mean, someone's got to take penalties off him. I mean, that's got to be on Bilardo, right? Come on, lad. You've just got to put your foot down there.
But so his football career comes to an end, and that's kind of it. This book was written in 2004. Like, subsequently, he managed Argentina, right?
Yeah, he did, but in, like, 2010... But they didn't... Absolute clusterfuck. I think it's worth quickly just mentioning his little story with the Pope. So,
yeah, that is fun.
The Pope, he feels sorry for the poor, like we must do for the poor. And he points out that you could perhaps sell some of the gold ceiling in the Vatican. But more than that, he met him with La Tota, with his mother. And he says, and his mother said, oh, the Pope gave me a medal, like a little... what is it like? You're a Catholic.
Rosary beads.
Oh, rosary beads. And these are special. But when I looked at the rosary beads, they were the same as mine. So he confronted the Pope about it. Like, what's so special about my mum's rosary beads, eh? Hey, hey. And he just gave him a little pat on the shoulder, which he found patronising.
Yeah, he was outraged. And then, like, so John Paul II, I knew this, was a goalkeeper. And he mentions it. He's a goalkeeper anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, not good enough to play football. I mean, that's pretty good, isn't it? I mean, how many times did the Pope get confronted? Like, can you imagine anyone in the world?
And apparently, the story goes that Maradona went the day after being out, like, without going to bed and was doing coke in the bathroom, in the Pope's private bathroom. That's not in the book, but I saw that elsewhere. But yeah, that's Diego. So, what did you think of the book?
Well, it's certainly one of the better ones, isn't it, Johnny? Again, I would have liked a bit more... Well, possibly not more drugs, but a bit more sex. I mean, I wish he could have talked about that a bit more. I guess, you know, he was with his wife at the time, but it's such a huge part of his life. He missed out the partying. I mean, I would have been fascinated to read about his partying. It's all football. And I'm not knocking it because he is football, but I would have liked to know what a night out with Diego was like.
Yeah, that would be nice. Something that I think that you learn reading these books is that they all would hold a lot. Like, maybe Southall was perhaps the most candid, but they all withhold a lot. And in a way, I don't think Maradona would be capable of just doing something mundane or banal. So while he's withholding a lot, I still thought it was just incredible and really, really, I really enjoyed this. I think maybe the one I enjoyed the most, and it's not the best book. It's just he's the best character. He's the best character that maybe football has ever produced. Can you think?
I would absolutely agree with it. He is.
So
in terms of charisma, and that's a word I used before, but no one comes even close, do they? Like, no one comes even close to him.
Like, do you know who's the most charismatic person ever in English football? Like, Brian Clough?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Like, and then you're really getting into like the your Frank Worthingtons and stuff, like, who are really minor people on the world stage.
But if you took someone like Beckham, like who's obviously very famous, like loved, was a successful footballer, obviously not on the same level as Maradona as a footballer, but not at all as interesting as Maradona.
Well, that's it. If you talk about the Mount Rushmore of footballers, your Pele, boring. Ronaldo, boring. Messi, boring. Beckenbauer, I guess, has got a bit about him, and so does Cruyff. But nowhere near Maradona.
No.
Nowhere near.
Cantona is an interesting character, right? He lived a life, it seemed. Maybe he's less interesting now, maybe. But Maradona had those elements and more, but was just amazing, was the best player. Like, and it seems to be widely regarded up until Messi as the best player. And maybe people are revisionist or people who weren't around say they like Maradona more than Pele just because, whatever, he's kind of cooler and there's more footage of him. There's better documentaries about him and that kind of stuff. So maybe... I find those conversations kind of silly anyway. I don't know how anyone can really compare people that they didn't really watch.
But yeah, it's human nature, isn't it? But the end of the century, right, 2000, FIFA did like an awards, right? And it was like the player of the century, and it was Pele. And then they had to add an extra category, like people's player of the century, and that was Maradona.
Really?
Like, voted for by the public. It's Maradona all day, isn't it? Like, because deep down, we all love a scallywag.
I would definitely recommend this book to anyone who's interested in reading football books. I think there's various things wrong with it, but if you like football, you couldn't not read this and enjoy it, I think.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, even if you don't remember Maradona, you know the legend. And it pads it out, right? It pads it out. You get to hear about the other stuff. Like, because to me, Maradona was 86, 90, and Naples.
The thing about him as well is that as you read these things, you can watch just so much. I just consumed Maradona for the last week. It was brilliant. How are we going to score this? Five.
I'm going to give this 4 big noses out of 5. And I only don't give it 5 big noses just because some of the translation is so clunky. Just my final point, right? The River Plate supporters are known as Gallina, right? And he's like, oh, I showed those hens. Fucking hell, call them chickens. Chickens. It's derogatory. I mean, come on, it jumps out of you. I mean, blimey.
I'm going to give him 5 El Narigons just because, yeah, for the reasons mentioned. If you're going to read footballers' autobiographies, read this book.
Yeah, it's a really good one. And as I say, it's very romantic. It takes you back to the time. He's a poet in his own little angry way.
And there is some nice turns of phrases on that point.
Oh, there are some nice turns of phrases. Like, what does he say here? I've got it written down. Oh, he was lonelier than Adam on Mother's Day. That was a nice one, isn't it? Like, I've never heard that.
Well, that's it. And next week, or sorry, the next episode from One Titan to the Next is Steve Claridge.
Yep, from the sublime to the ridiculous.
Yeah, Tales from the Boot Room.
I'm looking forward to this, though.
Yeah, me too. All right, well, thanks, Al.
Thank you, Johnny. Just like you.